And that sound means the start of another Missal for the Masses. This is the Chaplain's Assistant Mortar Pod, and I am your host, Gary. And this is the podcast where I talk about what's going on in my life of collecting, whether it's news or comics or a vehicle, playset, or even a trailer from the G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero toy line from 1982 to present day, but honestly focusing more on the O-ring era from 1982 to 1994. Now, this is another comic-focused Missal. This is the second in a three-part series. This month, I am pretty much covering comic books in an effort to catch up to falling behind on February. So a little bit what's going on in my life of collecting, really not much new. In keeping with what I said last Missal, just a little touch base on Void Rivals number 7, the Energon universe. And that's works out well for this Missal. We'll be covering the Cobra Commander and Duke issues. So Void Rivals number 7, Robert Kirkman, Lorenzo DeFelici. This is the 7th chapter, the start of a new trade paperback. And I say that because as I was reading the book, I noticed things about the story that made it feel like the beginning of a longer arc. It did bookend nicely. It doesn't feel like a hard start, because we did kind of leave a little bit on a cliffhanger in issue number 6. But issue number 7 introduces a new villain and continuing the journey of the lead protagonists. So there's still stuff going on. It's a good read. I think some of the first 6 issues were a little bit stronger than this one. But I did enjoy it, and looking forward to the further adventures of those characters. It is something new, and I'm happy that Kirkman is excited to add to this Hasbro Transformers and G.I. Joe mythos. Now, again, I only picked up cover A, and it's a really nice shot of the new villain, who we really don't get to see much of in this issue, but he sure does look cool. So hopefully he gets to do some cool stuff as well.
Now back to G.I. Joe.
Now, to start off the G.I. Joe Skybound review, we're going to start off with Duke number 2, brought to us by Joshua Williamson, Tom Riley, Jordy Belair, and Russ Wooten. And let's talk a little bit about the covers. Tom Riley did the cover A, so it is a picture of Duke being held in place by, we'll say, a SWAT team or SWAT guards, and that's a little bit more of what happened in the first issue. And then we have cover 2B. It's Duke driving, and it would appear to be the vamp with that roll bar. It seems to be a little anime-inspired. It is definitely action-filled. He's grimacing. He's holding his pistol in his right hand while he steers with his left. It's a good image. It's somewhat, like I said, the line work is anime-inspired, but the colors are very painterly. It is a neat image. And then we have the 1 in 10 variant cover, which is Duke driving, and it looks with clutch in essentially a demo derby car as they race around a junkyard being shot at. Personally, out of the 3 books, I would say that this cover right here, it doesn't really have action that is in the book, but because of the cartoonish colors on the car that Duke is driving, it has flames, and then it has like a shark mouth or a tiger mouth, like from the Tiger Force, over the front wheel well, on the fender, you know, and then it fades into flames. I think the cartoonish works a little bit more for me. It's a little bit more lighthearted than the overall tone of these G.I. Joe books. And I think that's something that I need a little bit more of but I'll talk about that in a little bit. So, and just to say, cover C, the 1 in 10 variant, is by Tyler Boss. So, good job on that one. So, a little bit of a plot breakdown. The first page shows Clutch reading an article on Duke, now wanted for murder of 16 people. He's on top of his trailer home inside Manny's Mean Machines junkyard. He walks inside and we see his Bachelor's of Science from MIT with a kind of glaring space for where the degree subject would be. As he pours his coffee, we see a shadow, which turns out to be Duke. They do the Predator handshake, you know, the Dylan, you son of a bitch handshake, which wakes up Clutch's date from last night. After he can't remember her name, Clutch gets a smack across his face and she storms out, leading Clutch to do some much needed first aid on Duke. He moves on to hacking Burkhart's old phone and discovering a secret function of it, tracking her inventions. Turning it on also sends a signal to Destro at his Mars headquarters. Duke and Clutch talk, but they hear music, which means rock and roll is ready for his debut in his full classified splendor. He promptly shoots up Clutch's hot rod, blowing it up. They retreat to the garage and break out in the vamp, where rock and roll switches to drones to herd Clutch and Duke into Stalker's crosshairs. Stalker takes out the tires and they crash into a telephone pole. Duke tries to punch Stalker, but Stalker counters with a roundhouse kick he learned from an old friend. Clutch and Duke are taken to the pit as prisoners. The cliffhanger? The Baroness is also a prisoner there. So, in essence, issue 2 introduces us to basically 3 new characters: the Baroness, Rock and Roll, Stalker, and also Clutch. So that's 4 characters. I can't count, but anyway, not too much goes on here other than setting up a little bit of the bona fides of what's going on with the G.I. Joe team or what these characters are, setting them up as the heavy hitters, the characters, the forces to be reckoned with, whichever side they fall on, for this G.I. Joe world. So it's a really good way of building, of character buildup. And that's what I feel that this issue does best. Obviously, Baroness is the cliffhanger, so we don't really get her there as much as the shock value of her being there, if you know who she is. If you don't know who she is, well, then you're going to end up, you know, wondering what import she has. I will say I really enjoy Tom Riley's art. He knows when to keep it gritty. He knows when to make it cute. And he also just has some awesome line work that's just, it's very clean. It's very 60s, you know, early 70s comic book-ish. But it does have modern touches here and there. So it is, it's very competently drawn and laid out. I don't know who to thank for, but when they do the gradients in the, like, the dotted shading, I'm going to assume that is Jordi Belair's coloring. I think their coloring is fantastic. It works really well to create mood and drama in the scene, but also just add texture to the panels over Tom Riley's art. So I'm really enjoying this. The art is good. The only thing, and not so much this issue, but I'm still surprised with, you know, and this is going to be a theme for all 3 books, is the amount of blood actually shown. I know that, you know, Talking Joe did talk to the guy who kind of set this whole deal up with Skybound in Hasbro, the guy in publishing. I've been putting off listening to it for no good reason, but, you know, it is interesting to see how the approvals are and how much more adult this series is. So I like it. It's still a little bit, jarring for me because of the subject matter, but that doesn't mean I'm not enjoying it. And also, at least in this issue, there's nothing gratuitous in it. So that's not really, you know, what I call, you know, yo's and no's. That's not really a no, but it's just something to be aware of, that this is definitely a teen-oriented book, which, you know, as somebody that was into G.I. Joe when he was five and, you know, and was reading the comics at 11, you know, never really got that feel from my reading. That's more of something that would come out of, you know, a teenager or young adult, you know, fantasy world of, you know, making it more grittier, you know, the Punisher and stuff. But overall, Duke number two, great read. And, you know, as somebody that loves G.I. Joe, as somebody that just probably just reading this for the Energon universe, this is a really good storytelling. And this is a good issue to really build character and build character moments. So moving on to Cobra Commander number two by, again, Josh Williamson, Andrea Milana, and Annalisa Leone, with Russ Wooten again as the letterer. And we'll start off, again, the covers. So Andrea Milana and Annalisa Leone did the cover art for the regular cover, cover A, and it is showing Buzzer running his chainsaw across Cobra Commander's face mask, his helmet, his silver dome covering into a mask. And because they are the interior artists, you know, the character models on the cover are on point for the rest of the book. You know, Cobra Commander has something that looks similar to a Luger to Buzzer's forehead. But Buzzer's is, you know, again, making lots of sparks, trying to cut off Cobra Commander's face in a fight to the death, apparently. It is a great cover. It's full of action. It is a cover that makes me want to pick up this book and read it because I want to see if this is inside. It is very well done in the swamp. Overall, this is a great cover. The flash of yellow, you know, the glow of the sparks in the dark swamp really pops, and it is just very lively. Now, the next cover that I got, I picked up the cover B. It is the Ricardo Lopez Ortiz variant, and it shows Cobra Commander in his traditional helmet rising, I could only assume, out of the swamp. And it's like about, let's say, nose level where the swamp water is in the helmet. The colors are very painterly. It is, you know, very dark. It is, you know, you almost sense the grime and the dirt and everything on Cobra Commander's helmet. And you have that. It's a very menacing image with a glint, you know, a sparkle, a crosshair of light coming from where his left eye would be behind that mask. It is a nice image. It's very menacing. It is something that I would say that if this was made a poster, I would totally get a poster of this. But for me, I still think cover A is the best. And then we will get to cover C, the 1 in 10 variant by Chris Burnham. And it is Torch with Zarana cornering Cobra Commander, who looks very similar to what he looked like in 1982, minus a Cobra emblem on his chest. But maybe his hands just covering it and they didn't draw it, but doesn't seem likely. Zarana is in the swamp fire. And, you know, Torch has his blowtorch out, and you got in the foreground, you got three crocodiles or alligators. And I would say alligators because this is the Florida Everglades, you know, closing in on Cobra Commander. And he's looking around. He looks like I wouldn't say defenseless, but it looks like he's trying to think of what to do. But his posture really seems like he's been caught unawares in this entrapment. You know, so Rana is pointing the Swamp Fire's gun at him. So, and you got the swamp all around. It is kind of cartoonesque. You know, the colors are nice. It is very traditional. You even got some fireflies dotting around it. And it is actually a really good cover. But for me, again, I'm just going to go back and just say, well, this is a great cover. I still think cover A by Andrea Milana and Annalisa Leone is the one to get on this one if you're only going to buy one cover. So with that, let's get into the plot of the book and catching up on that. We open up with a torture scene at the Dreadnought's cabin. We see guns and torture tools as a pair of men are being accused of gun running through the Dreadnought's territory. When one refuses to talk, the first sense of action and dread is Buzzer lifting his chainsaw and killing him. He's accompanied by Ripper. The other man talks that they were to meet some big dude with a flat top. This description matches Mercer, a character from the Duke miniseries. After getting the information, the Dreadnoughts give him a ride home, in quotes, which translates into being dragged by chains behind the Thunder Machine. We cut to a boat ride / gator park in the Everglades. Cobra Commander is still tracking the energy signal with his co-patriot, advising him to not cause any unwarranted attention. We get a quick one-page flashback for something having done to the commander's fellow traveler before the two of them have an argument that begins to get physical. At this point, a game warden / park ranger asks to see their ID, and he pulls his gun. And I'd just like to say the Cobra Commander had walked past the fence into the area where, you know, a little too dangerous. Cobra Commander's protector just calmly walks to the ranger, taking shots directly to his chest, and just grabs his wrists and in one fell motion rips their arms out of their sockets as he headbutts him. The head has turned into a red puddle. The commander sneaks away during this, still tracking an energy signature when he comes up to the Dreadnought's cabin. He walks in and we see body parts hanging from the rafters of the workshop. There's a head, an arm attached to half a torso, and another torso with a left arm and a half a right arm, and the head attached still. Truly gruesome. Cobra Commander notes that they are also experimenting with this energy as he hears the engine of the Thunder Machine approach. Buzzer and Ripper want to know what he's doing there, and the commander says if they cannot help him, he'll be on his way. But the Dreadnoughts aren't going to let that happen. Cobra Commander responds by opening fire and then blows up the Thunder Machine, to Ripper's shock. They set up for confrontation when distracted by Zarana. The commander has slunk off to an even more dangerous part of the swamp in his search for the mysterious energy source. He hears a noise asking, "Protector, is that you?" And then with a sploosh, he falls in the water with a beautiful splash page, no pun intended, of giant mutant alligators. One other thing to talk about before I get into a couple of good things I liked and didn't like about the book. Cobra Commander is definitely the horror book, and the torture scene and the horrific images coming from the Dreadnought's cabin really sets up the Dreadnought's as more than a biker gang. When the Dreadnought's are approaching Cobra Commander, they're getting out of the Thunder Machine. They have the requisite donuts and quote-unquote grape soda. The grape soda wasn't clearly as defined, so it could be beer. But it was definitely a little bit jarring, that dichotomy in that moment of the themes and what we're getting with the Dreadnoughts. When I reviewed Cobra Commander number one with Joel, you know, he was like, you know, the Dreadnoughts could be a weird taste. And again, you know, we never really... in other media before now, not really doing too much with like Devil's Due, but like, you know, what happened during the IDW era with, you know, the reimagining of G.I. Joe. But nothing has left an impression like this with the Dreadnoks. You know, they were always troublemakers. They were never really, I would call, a threat that required the military's attention. But, you know, with this introduction to what Buzzer and Ripper are doing, it's huge to me as they've really made the Dreadnoks evil. And that's something that really they never got taken down, you know, that hard before. Never brought to that level of antagonism for our heroes to come. So it's a very interesting look, and it's a very shocking thing for somebody, you know, that's been reading these for, you know, 32 years, 33 years now. So was really, you know, that's the other thing. And again, we got the blood, you know, and stuff going on like I talked about just a few minutes ago. So, but otherwise, reality is what I do like about this series is the fact that they are making Cobra Commander and essentially what he's collecting for his organization right now, it seems, they're making this really a world-building miniseries. There isn't anybody so far in this book I would say I was quote-unquote rooting for. You know, there's no hero. There's only villains. And this is more of a miniseries of a character study. You know, with the Duke series, you have a hero, you have villains, and you want Duke to win. You want Duke to expose the conspiracy of, you know, Starscream. But with the Cobra Commander series, it is really, it's super focused. It's a character study, and it's almost like breaking, you know, really, the only thing I could compare it to is like Breaking Bad. It's how far or evil will you go? And it just keeps getting the characters keep getting worse and worse and evil and eviler. So I like that part. It's a different take. It's keeping me invested, but it also makes me wonder, you know, if this was more than a miniseries, could this be an ongoing? And I don't think that me personally would be interested in keep reading this book, you know, of just heinous act after heinous act, because at that point, the shock value is lost and the book to me would become gratuitous. But right now, it's not there yet for me. Which what I would say is, you know, that would be what my detraction is that there's no good person here. They're all evil, and the end game, you know, what's the end game for the series, you know, two issues in. So I like it. I don't like it as much as Duke, but I like it. It's evil. It's setting up, it's world building. I guess the question comes, or what I would say is, you know, is this necessary for what we're building in the Energon universe? Could this have been all done in a single title? I don't know. But it is, you know, really good character study of what's going on, which is what is gripping about this story. And now, finally, back to Duke number 3. Again, we got Josh Williamson as the writer. We got Tom Riley as the artist, Jody Belair as the colorist, and Russ Wooten as letterer. And taking a look, I was only able to get 2 covers of this book. I was spaced out of my skull, I guess, when I picked these up. So I missed cover 3B, and it is sold out. So other than buying cover 3B, you know, the online, which I'm not really doing now. I'm just, you know, I like going to the comic shop. I like supporting my local comic shop, Boom Tube Comics in Southington, Connecticut, Meriden Waterbury Turnpike. You know, he's a good dude. like I said, I spaced that Wednesday, and it is what it is. So we'll talk a little bit about Tom Riley's regular cover, which shows Baroness in the foreground with a pistol in her right hand, pointed to the sky, walking towards essentially the camera. And you have Duke with his back to her back, you know, looking over his shoulder as he ejects the magazine from his pistol, you know, as the bad guys are on the ground. It's a good one. You know, it's always good to have a little cheesecake with the Baroness on the cover. I don't know if I would call it a standout, but it's a decent cover. Now, cover C, which I also managed to get, is the Tyler Boss Incentive variant, which is similar in structure to his incentive variant for issue number one. And in this one, it shows Duke fighting Major Blood throughout the pit. The pit is a cutaway section, a cutaway view of it. And each section of the pit reads like a comic strip with panels, and as you work all your way down, with the final panel at the lower right-hand corner showing Duke getting away with the tire tracks and, you know, Major Blood with his hand up, you know, like curses and foil you and stuff. And it's a fun cover, very, again, in line with what I expect my world of G.I. Joe to be, what my mind's eye, what I remember, what, you know, flavor of G.I. Joe it is. And it's a nice cover, but overall, for the way that the mature themes of the book and what's going on, obviously for me, Tom Riley's cover A is the winner here. So the final plot breakdown for this missile. Duke 3 opens with Major Blood giving Destro a sit rep at Mars headquarters. He gives a quick recap of the previous events. It is a very high level overview, basically summarizing what you need to know, what is going on into issue number 3. Duke is captured. They thought he'd be dead. And he may be privy to information that Dr. Burkhart possessed. The people at Mars are now moving their warehouse / headquarters as Destro is informed where Duke is. The pit. We switch to the pit where Hawk is addressing Stalker, Rock and Roll, while Duke, Clutch, and the Baroness are in custody. The Baroness is trying to convince Duke to escape together when Duke tells her that he knows who she is already. They talk about Duke's motivations leading him to remember his encounter with Starscream. We move to the surface of the pit with where Hawk's prison transport team arrives, dead. Stalker calls to Rock and Roll to lock everything down as we see three Cobra transport copters in the background. So I wrote that down, but it makes sense. They're not really Cobra transport copters yet. They're Destros. So in the copters are Blood's team, the Bloodhounds, with orders to kill everyone. We go to prison where the three captives are trying to surmise what is going on at the surface where Rock and Roll arrives, hurt, to release Clutch and Duke. The Baroness calls out for help, that she can't be left there. They will kill her. Duke, hearing this, turns his head under the notion of doing the right thing when the doorway Clutch and Rock and Roll were approaching explodes. It is a team of Bloodhounds opening fire. Duke dives for a pistol and shoots the three of them. Baroness notes the other two are hurt, Clutch and Rock and Roll, and Duke can't escape without her help. So he shoots the lock, kind of a cliche, and hands her the gun so he can assist Clutch and Rock and Roll. The Baroness leaves to find an exit, and while Duke's back is turned to the opening, he gets sucker punched to the back of the head by Major Blood. There's a short exchange of punches and banter where Blood admits to killing Burkhart, and he subsequently shoots Duke in the leg. Blood doesn't want to kill him yet because he needs Duke alive to answer a question. Where's Burkhart's machine? Duke will die before he answers, and Blood responds with his revolver to Duke's face. Before Duke answers, we get to the final page. Blood takes a bullet to the back of the head, and it exits with a Duke looks up to see Baroness getting dressed and admitting there is a huge bounty on Duke's head after all. This book was action-packed. It had a lot of character moments. Duke talking to the Baroness, really getting underneath Duke's skin. Also, you know, really getting to Duke's motivations and his loyalty to the military and to the American way of life. You know, getting to the core of his being, you know, the ultimate Boy Scout and his refusal to break. And the Baroness just being the opposite of that, of being an aristocrat that went to try to topple the systems. So we had a really good tete-a-tete, you know, in this issue with that. Really good character studies here. And, you know, Clutch is basically just hanging out. And, you know, same thing with Rock and Roll and Stalker. So it's actually, you know, and it's action-packed. It moves pretty fast overall. It is actually, of these three issues that I'm talking about today, it's probably my favorite one. It's a little light on, you know, some of the plot, but it makes it up with the action, and it really gets a little frenetic, and you got a lot of energy going on in between the gutters and stuff, and you wonder what's going on. You don't know what happened to Stalker up there. You don't know why or how Rock and Roll got hurt getting to Duke. And it makes sense because this is Duke's book. We don't need to know what happened to Rock and Roll. We don't need to know what happened to Stalker. I mean, eventually we will, because they have action figures. But it's Duke's book, and it keeps... So while sometimes, you know, you want to know, you know, what happened in this fight or in this shootout, because this book is focused on Duke, it's a character study on Duke, you're rooting for Duke, you have a clear, you know, hero's journey going on here, you know, it's not necessary to the plot of the story. It's, you know, then you have the other side where you really introduce Major Blood as a force to be reckoned with. And I know when this issue first launched, you know, somebody posted on YouTube like, oh, you know, major character dies in the thing. Now, the one thing, you know, this is a spoiler-filled missile, is Major Blood doesn't have an eye patch anywhere in this issue. And we had this really cool shot, again, pun intended, on the final page. And this is like, you know, how, you know, Stella got her groove back, you know, how Major Blood got his eye patch. So we have that. We also have how the Baroness is probably going to meet Destro for the first time. And overall, the character work was done really well in this book. The action was, you know, great. You know, Tom Riley's art really does. I do think it really fits the style of the book. I think his art really is good. So I'm really, again, really impressed with the Duke series. I really think, as part of the Energon universe, it's probably my second favorite or my first favorite. It's really between a toss-up between Transformers and Duke right now in the Energon universe. They're doing really good jobs on these two. Cobra Commander, you know, is a close third. And then, unfortunately, right now, you know, Void Rivals is the fourth one. I'm just not... You know, I'm invested, but it's just not hitting those notes. It's not resonating with me at the moment. Really enjoyed it. Really looking for issue number 4 to close out the mini, and can't wait to see where they go from there. You know, we do have a new G.I. Joe book announced. And then just recently they announced the Destro series and the Scarlet series. And one thing I am kind of excited about, you know, moving on from these reviews, is the Scarlet series, because Kelly Thompson is going to be writing Scarlet. And Kelly Thompson's voice, when it comes to female character work, I've enjoyed. She had a really, really good run on Black Widow, and the last version, the art was very good. It had Adam Hughes covers, which alone make it almost worth the $4 an issue. But I really felt the story was good, and she told an original story that was gripping. And while I don't think it's ever going to have, you know, Black Widow's, you know, husband's first appearance or something like that, but it was a really good story. And that's why one of the reasons why I read comics. I read comics for good stories. So I am excited to see what she's going to bring into Scarlet. And of course, obviously, I can't wait for Destro. I just haven't read as much about it. Again, with this Energon Universe stuff, I'm trying to stay away from previews in so much as the fact that I want to be surprised by the story. I don't want to be, you know, hanging on for every, you know, 5-page preview. I'm still doing that for Larry's book, Larry Hama's book. You know, that is part 3 of the comic book catch-up reviews this month on the Childhood Assistance Murder Pod. You know, I'm looking forward to be excited and going over this and reading it and being part of the community that is absolutely growing with the Skybound publishing of G.I. Joe comics. It has created even more renewed interest in G.I. Joe comics in general. And I think that's partially because they're doing a pretty darn good job themselves at it. That concludes this missile of the Chapman's Assistant Murder Pod. I have been your host, Gary. Thank you for listening. The Chapman's Assistant Murder Pod can be found on all the major podcasting platforms. Leave a comment, write a review. I read them all. And sharing it, and that only helps grow and improve this podcast. Chapman's Assistant Murder Pod is on social media, so you can catch more of my action figure photography and stuff. It's been kind of hectic lately, so I haven't been posting as much, but I still do when I can. And you can find me at Chaplain Joe Pod, Facebook, Twitter, X, Instagram, and other avenues as well. You can also just send an email to chaplainjoepod@gmail.com, and I respond to them too. So I really do appreciate you for taking the time to listen this far on this episode. The Chaplain's Assistant Murder Pod is the strange, but not a strange, nerdy little brother of The Pint, a pop culture podcast. And lastly, one final missile for the masses: be decent to one another.